Zuerst war die Haut. Der Tattoo-Podcast. Mit Oliver Plöger.
Jo, und damit wäre das Thema bzw. der Inhalt dieses Podcasts ja eigentlich schon halbwegs umrissen. Ein paar Worte würde ich vorweg aber trotzdem noch gerne loswerden. Kurz zu mir. Mein Name ist Oliver Plöger. Ich wohne in Köln und bin seit circa 2002, 2003 als freier Journalist unterwegs. Ich habe viele, viele Interviews geführt mit Musikern, Künstlern, Sportlern etc. Ich habe Dokumentationen im In- und Ausland gedreht und war dabei mal hinter, aber auch mal vor der Kamera. Viel wichtiger aber, insbesondere was diesen Podcast angeht, ich habe Mitte, Ende der 90er Jahre angefangen, mich selbst tätowieren zu lassen. Ich habe inzwischen Arbeiten von knapp 40 Tätowierern aus dem In- und Ausland gesammelt. Ich habe zudem auch mal einige Ausstellungen mit Tätowierern organisiert und kuratiert und war auch 3 Jahre lang mal sowas wie eine Art Shopguy in einem Laden. In diesem Podcast geht es mir vor allem darum, den Werdegang, die Entwicklung und die ganz persönlichen und subjektiven Eindrücke eines jeweiligen Tätowierers in Erfahrung zu bringen. Warum machst du das überhaupt? Warum arbeitest du genau in dem Stil, in dem du arbeitest? Wie und warum haben sich deine Arbeiten weiterentwickelt? Was nervt dich am Tätowieren? Was ist das Geile am Tätowieren? Welche Rolle spielt Social Media? Und was für ein Privatleben hat man eigentlich, wenn man immer nur an die nächste Tätowierung denkt? Um all das und wahrscheinlich noch viel mehr geht es in diesem Podcast. Und jetzt viel Spaß und eine gute Zeit mit meinem heutigen Gast.
Zuerst war die Haut. Der Tattoo-Podcast. Mit Oliver Plöger.
So, bevor es aber losgeht, 1, 2, 3 Anmerkungen meinerseits. Zum einen ist es so, dass das Interview unter etwas anderen Voraussetzungen stattgefunden hat. Das heißt, normalerweise besuche ich ja meinen Gegenüber zu Hause, der kommt zu mir oder treffen uns sonst wo und nehmen uns richtig viel Zeit. Bei Henk Schiffmacher war es ein bisschen anders und zwar hatte der nur begrenzt Zeit, in meinem Fall eine Stunde. Der hat nämlich eine Autogrammstunde gegeben, eine Signing-Session anlässlich seines neuen Buchs Tattoo, was im Taschenverlag erschienen ist und genau im Taschenstore in der Kölner Innenstadt war er dann auch zu Gast. Das hat zu dem Ergebnis geführt, dass das Gespräch eher ein Interview ist, ne? Weil ich hatte auch relativ viel, was ich abhaken wollte und dann hetzt man da so ein bisschen da durch. Also es ist halt nicht so wirklich so eine Gesprächsebene entstanden, was mir aber schon vorher so ein bisschen klar war. Und was das Ganze zudem noch etwas komplizierter gemacht hat, war, dass der Store-Manager penibel darauf geachtet hat, dass Henk und ich, obwohl wir beide geimpft waren, beide Masken tragen während des Interviews. Und ja, Henk Holländer, ich Deutscher, wir hatten uns committed, das Interview auf Englisch zu führen. Und wenn man dann die Mimik und den Mund nicht sieht seines Gegenüber, dann macht es das nicht gerade einfacher. Da verfällt man dann auch gerne mal irgendwann in sein 8. Klasse Schulenglisch, damit man auch sicher ist, dass das Gegenüber überhaupt mitbekommt, was man denn da so wirklich von einem will bzw. meint. Das nur kurz so die groben Koordinaten für dieses Gespräch und ja, viel Spaß damit.
Zuerst war die Haut. Der Tattoo-Podcast mit Oliver Plöger.
Mein heutiger Gast ist ein Mann, den, glaube ich, jeder in der Tattoo-Welt kennt, nämlich Henk Schiffmacher, aka Henky Panky. Und ich bin hier heute zu Gast im Kölner Laden des Taschenverlags, wo Henk Schiffmacher heute sein neues Buch Tattoo vorstellen wird. Henk, ja. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
It's a pretty impressive book you already released and you're doing a signing session for today. So how long did it take to make the book and how did it feel when you got the very first copy of it in your hands?
The first books are always a bit emotional when you worked on a book and you get the first print or even the one just before the print, like the proof.
Yeah.
I always keep the proofs as well. It is a sensation to make a book, and when the book is this size, it becomes an extreme sensation.
Yeah,
because
and like heavy.
we had 1,000 tattoos for a long time. It was like the Bible for a lot of people, and when I published something on it, they still say, "Oh, this is my first book. This is the one that made me go and wanted to be a tattooer." Or so that makes me very happy, very proud.
It's an all-time classic already.
Yeah, and now this is the New Testament, maybe the Genesis.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of old.
No, it's thicker.
Yeah,
and there are much more words in it, I guess.
Yeah, this is 6.5 kilos.
Yeah,
in Holland they say if you. If you have to show your dick, you better be make sure that it's the biggest one.
Yeah.
So like, this is a... It took a long time to make this thing.
How long?
About 6 years of labor, of talking, of changing, of looking.
Do we get sometimes tired in the middle of it? Like, oh, come on, more years to come.
No. The woman who made this book, Noelle, was really a fantastic person to talk to. And she took the utmost... she really took her time. She's very... meticulous woman, and she wanted to get all the mistakes out of there, and so she worked really hard on the thing. When we did the second museum, I was happy, which when the failure bankrupt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like the one thing I got out of there is that a lot of that stuff has been professionally digitalized.
Yeah.
Which is an important thing, because that makes it accessible for other people.
Was it all the pictures did the same photographer?
No, it was brought to one of those companies who took 40,000 pictures of stuff.
Oh, crazy.
So like there is a shitload of photos of
every angle, every view. Yeah.
All the machines, all the... Yeah. And so this is not... I mean, this is... there's way more... sometimes it worries me how much it is, because it's also, what are you going to do? You're 69, we had the COVID, and it made you realize that you also are the caretaker of something, which you might have to find a good house for. And at this moment, with the prices of square meters, it's very hard to find a place to make a museum again. Yeah. You need somebody there who is an extreme businessman to run the museum. Yeah. So you need also, that makes you also needing more square meters.
Yeah.
Because you need to have a shop in there, you need to have a coffee shop in there, you need to have a bookstore, you need to have people working and tattooing there.
Yeah.
So it becomes very difficult to run a museum. And I don't see this thing very much and fast happening again, although I would love that.
Yeah.
But
you're
think
still searching,
the chances of making a virtual museum are way more bigger, because then you have no square meters.
Yeah.
You know, so like you can put all your money in. I mean, I have thousands and thousands of pieces of paper on tattooing who are actually completely worthless until you have them all digitalized and people can look for them. A little article on so-and-so, or article on so-and-so.
Yeah.
And nowadays you have these digitalization machines who immediately take all these names out of there.
Yeah.
I'm not a computer guy.
These
computer people know a lot.
And that's what they're famous for, yeah.
So, yes, maybe that's happening. For example, some people gave me their inheritance. Rudy Inhelder, who was a very big guy in the old tattoo world, left me all his paper and also all his movies. So I have 200 VHS movies.
Crazy.
On 80s.
Which you have to digitalize as well.
Which you got to digitalize, otherwise they'll go... And now you need to find a company who can do this, and you need to find a way to pay for something like that. So, I don't know. In the next years, all this stuff is got to happen. If not,
it's kind of gone.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Betamax, are gone already. For example,
so do you feel a kind of a duty?
Yes.
You're on a mission.
And there is some stuff which I had personally paid for to restore it, because some of the stuff is really old. Horiyoshi gave me 4 drawings from Horiyoshi 1.
Horiyoshi the third gave you drawings from Horiyoshi the
one.
Okay, crazy.
And they were in thousands of little pieces.
Ah.
And they had to be brought to the Rijksmuseum to get a paper restorer to restore them all and like made them soft and wet, clean them and glue them on a different skin again so they become the drawing. There's little holes in there, but they
it's like a complicated puzzle, yeah?
They are, yeah, it's a very, a puzzle, but it's very much worth to save this stuff for the future.
Yeah.
But that's not easy, that's not cheap, and that's got to happen.
Yeah. Where is all the stuff right now that can be seen in the book?
It's all in my house.
Really?
I have everything in the house.
Where do you live?
Well, it's funny because like I have a place which is about 220 square meters.
Okay.
And it's full.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, And then there is a couple of other boxes I have, but in order to like... Actually, some of that stuff should be climatized, and there is no money for that. That's too much.
You already mentioned the Horiyoshi, the first painting in there, which was given to you by Horiyoshi the Third.
Yeah.
What is like the most extraordinary item that can be seen in that book?
Well, there is many things there. Yeah. I like the very very early stuff.
Yeah.
There is some Japanese stuff from around 1850.
That's crazy.
And that's stuff what they call like from the waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
So like these tattooers were they were hand tattooing, hand poking.
Yeah.
And they would be on the Nagasaki waterfront. This is the same area where Puccini wrote Madame Butterfly.
Yeah.
And where the Tsar Nicholas got tattooed there, and King George the Fifth got tattooed there.
Mm-hmm.
So like that was when the Japanese harbors opened up, just actually before the Boxer War. So that's early travelers who got these tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the Akamatsu stuff. And Akamatsu was apparently somebody who was in Europe around the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And his books ended up in Malta at the table of Charlie. And Charlie in Malta actually had all these British sailors looking through it, and he would write down with a pencil the name of the ships of the people who got tattooed, so you can actually see which was the most popular tattoo.
Of course.
So there is little history added to it. Sometimes you have to look twice at a drawing and look at the flip side and maybe find a name or a little note or so it will explain to you a little more. Early stuff is very often very erotic as well.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of naughty to be tattooed.
Yeah. It had to be,
And like people, not your neighbor could be tattooed without you knowing it.
Because they didn't show it.
Because he didn't do his arms or his hands or his neck.
Of course.
He was tattooed on his legs and on his ass and
hidden
his
areas,
belly.
Yeah.
So there is little ladies who kill the candlelight by farting and... naughty stuff.
Yeah, you got different chapters in that book.
You got to come up with a time sequence or so that could have been anything.
Yeah,
and that's when the early prints we have come from around. It starts like where people like Captain Cook and Bligh came back from the islands, and in those days
Polynesian.
Yeah, but if ships came back from a long journey, there would always be people going to the harbor and see what kind of new stuff would come in.
They brought back,
And Rembrandt, for example, was a collector. He would buy small stuff from sailors and make his collection.
Yeah.
This is also the era in which the first museums were made in Europe.
Yeah, okay.
The Medici were early collectors. In the Pitt River people in England were early collectors.
Yeah.
So... the oldest museums in Europe, we have the Tylers Museum, I think it's 17 something or so. So like before that, people wouldn't go to a museum.
Of course.
Couldn't even read or write in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, like we always think of ourselves as very highly educated and everything, but
200
the
years
Japanese
ago?
200 years ago were very much farther than we are in those days.
Yeah. But there are two like big... like styles of tattooing that are very prominent in this book, which is like, I would call it the tribal stuff and the Japanese kind of tattooing.
Yeah, well, I've always had a very big interest in the tribal part.
Yeah.
And Lyle was, you know, like I would know Lyle Turtle, and Lyle was always into the the Americana and the Western type of tattooing.
The Western traditional kind of tattoos.
Yeah. And when I started with collecting tattooing, I immediately had a thing like, okay, well, where this came from? What is this? What is there in any older forums? Mm. Where can I see? So I went on this quest.
Yeah.
I went to see where we originally came from.
Was it in the late 80s? When did you start this?
Well, my first books was I bought in the early 70s.
Early 70s, okay.
And so like this was Art, Sex and Symbols.
Yeah.
By Christopher Scott.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic book. Mm-hmm. I still think one of the best books ever made.
Yeah.
And that really got me started. And immediately there was also an introduction to all these different tribal things, the Marcasian, mm-hmm. and it wasn't much to find in those days. You had to really go into more ethnographical books.
Did it catch you right from the beginning? The first time you saw a picture of a tribal tattoo?
What did it do to you? Well, you know, like I started to collect books and I found them like Joost van der Steinen. They were really big and expensive books in those days to buy, but I liked them. I wanted to know where this stuff came from and why, and the difference between, and the communication of it. Mm. The main thing I liked about tattooing is I am a dyslexic person, so I grew up not being able to read or write very well as a child.
Yeah,
but I was born a Catholic boy, so the Catholic Church.
A lot of images.
The images.
Strong images.
Yeah, for me as a child, that made me read.
Yeah.
Read by looking.
Self-explained. And kind of.
Yeah, like the Kruiswegstatie, you know, 14 pictures on the side of the church.
Yeah.
About the life of Jesus.
The pictures tell a story.
And we had a Bible in the house, illustrated by Gustave Doré. So to me, that was I would read page by page. By just the pictures, and the picture always stayed me. The picture helped me
understanding
to learn how to read and write. Mm-hmm. And the picture has always been important to me. I still we still live a lot by pictures. The whole traffic system is by pictograms,
of course,
and we all know them. That's how we make sure that people don't make accidents. If you read the book, the signs well.
Yeah.
If you go to the central station, it will tell you, okay, there I can park my bag, there is there I can eat food. It's just simple pictograms.
Everybody understands.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the same with tribal tattoos to you?
That is the same with tribal tattoos, and it's the same actually with good tattooing.
Yeah.
We are at a point when there is a lot of people at this moment who make tattoos that do not communicate at all anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like some of us are like really extremely drawers, and like to turn people into black arms with Batman in the dark in an alley, and there's a little light in his eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is not a tattoo which can survive for a very long time.
Of course not.
And you need tattoo. Tattooing is actually a very simple art, and the more simple you are, the better. And the Japanese, of course, are very good in this. They always, and they still like that kind of nifty, nanke, those little comic thing is still very big in Japan.
Yeah.
And we hear, when you see, I just saw a book on the best German tattoos.
Yeah.
Or the best German tattooers.
Yes.
And I think there's 50 of them and
yeah.
I didn't like one of them.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It is all these people who know how to draw.
Yeah.
But they should stick to fucking piece of paper and not to the human skin.
Yeah.
The piece of paper is a different thing.
Yeah.
You can put way more detail in a piece of paper and you can do more, but like on the skin, this is a life.
Yeah.
This goes into wind, salt, sea, sun.
Yeah.
This goes pregnant and becomes unpregnant. And
I think one of the reasons is that younger tattooers say they draw on iPads and stuff.
The iPad is a dangerous thing. It also is a blessing. It's fantastic when you see.
Do you use it sometimes?
Well, my daughter, he works with the iPad sometimes.
Yeah.
But for a young tattooer, he should draw with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Because like when you take a little drawing, you will have to translate this in a tattoo. And when you draw it with a pencil, you will find out where the difficult parts are.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to blow shit up and you take the iPad, you will not experience where the dark sides of the tattoo are.
Yeah.
And you will end up in get into trouble halfway tattooing.
Yeah. What was the last tattoo that really gave you like goosebumps? When you saw it, you were like, wow, this is amazing. This is like an outstanding work.
There is a Japanese kid at this moment working in Holland in The Hague.
Yeah.
Oshima, or I think, like, who makes a lot of black.
Yeah.
And he makes some very interesting type of tattoo.
Yeah.
Not really, I say, like, that's how we should do it. Uh-huh. Because, like, not everybody can do this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but some of that stuff is executed in such a perfect way.
Yeah.
That it see, there is two reasons why people can tattoo. There is people who tattoo because of the money.
Yeah.
And there is people who tattoo because of the tattoo.
They love it.
And I love the people who make first want to make a good product.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that product pays for it, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also people who think, nope, you know, bang, 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 I got a bang, bang. That's not how it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it is. Although all type tattooing is constructed to do this.
Yeah.
But when you do a Brooklyn Joe Lieber or early Ed Hardy stuff, it's perfectly to do, and you can do it in a very short time.
Yeah.
Malone stuff, Sailor Jerry stuff.
Mike Malone.
Easy to make if you know how to make a good line, mm-hmm. if you have the confidence, if you can draw, but you need to be able to draw and understand what you do. You cannot draw anything you do not understand.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah, I remember doing a Harley Davidson when I just started, and I mirrored it. I did it the other way around because I had no idea what the fuck a Kickstarter was. So if you have to learn to the engine to do it right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I think the biker itself would have told you in the end that, like,
well, yeah, this machine wouldn't work. I had a lot of big guys telling me you're doing something wrong here now. Yeah.
How was tattooing when you started tattooing? Like, 40 years ago. Is it comparable in any way to today? I think no.
No, but in Holland there was at that moment 4 people. I would just talk
including
about
you?
No, excluding me.
Okay.
I talked about it for a while ago with Ken Cameron.
Ken Cameron, California.
So we were talking about it.
Yeah.
He said, remember like in the late 70s,
yeah.
there was 400...
Just go on.
There was 400 tattooers in the whole world.
Crazy.
And we would know who they were.
Yeah.
You know, we would write letters to each other.
And you knew each other from letters.
Yeah,
from
So we know. And now there's 400 tattooers in one city.
Of course.
And the same as you see somebody on TV at this moment who has a full bodysuit or who has a big back piece. In 1970, you would know this guy.
Yeah, of course.
And now it's very normal. It's very normal. The guy is in Temptation Island, or the guy is on Expedition Robinson, or whatever the hell they call all these TV programs. Mm. He looks like David Beckham.
Yeah,
he's fine, and that's what we all sort of expect from tattoo. People they come in the shop and they bring the picture of if they want the tribal piece, they bring the picture from The Rock. Mm. And say, this is like how I want it. And then you see a big muscle guy. That's why you're not muscled yet. Well, you're not going to work on that.
Yeah. I will work on it. Yeah, of course.
It's very funny to see how many cannibals and headhunters we have living in Europe who can't even pull the skin of a custard.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's strange. Because when you try to do something, when these people are in trouble, we try to do something for people in New Zealand.
Mm.
And we thought all the people who have a Maori tattoo will at least have an interest in supporting this thing. No, you couldn't find nobody.
Mm.
They do not know exactly what they have on their arm.
Of course not.
They think they know.
Yeah.
Because now they've got hand poked.
Yeah.
Now there is all the hand pokes became some kind of shaman.
Yeah.
You know, they see your chakra and they read your chakras and then they will hand poke you.
Yeah.
It's totally bullshit. Mm. They become like sort of strange. They're creating their own little religion and they are the head of the church.
Yeah. when people come to your shop and show them like a picture of The Rock or whatever, what do you do with those people?
Well, yeah. Well,
do you try to explain? Or?
Well, you can explain only to a certain point. They might not want to know.
Mm.
But like at the very end, you are a mercenary. You have a shop and you sell something.
Of course.
You know, so well, you know, I'll do whatever I want to do anyway.
Yeah.
But like for the people who work there, yeah, well, you have to talk to the guy and like see if you can come up with a solution where you both are happy.
Yeah.
It is a compromising thing.
Mm-hmm.
And tattooing is like, yeah, I think the closest thing is people who got trained in the advertisement world very much how to deal with a customer. You have a customer. And this customer wants to wear his dreams.
Yeah.
So now you got to see if you're the right guy to make sure that this guy can wear his dreams.
Mm.
If he wants to do all kind of butterflies and you're not into the butterflies, I would advise to find somebody who is into the butterflies.
Yeah. Maybe the guy next door, yeah?
Well, maybe. And that's often not the case.
Yeah. How much are you still tattooing? You're 69 right now, right?
Yeah, I always try to go to the shop every day,
mm-hmm,
from 11 till around 2, 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And in the weekends, I like to work because my daughter works in the weekends, so that's it, for me it's nice,
yeah,
to work with her and to see what she's doing.
What kind of style is she tattooing?
She works, she's pretty much cool style, a nice old-fashioned
Kendi
Everett type of
okay,
and that's her big, yeah, example.
Yeah,
and then she is she's having a relationship with a guy called Juan Tayer,
uh-huh,
and he is a Chicano
Juan Tayer.
Yeah,
I know him. I know him.
So he was takes over his way of working a little bit.
He was working on the Aachen Convention as
yeah,
well.
He's a really good guy.
Black and gray, Chicano.
Comes out of the Bob Roberts, in the Bob Roberts school there.
Spotlight, yeah.
So Bob is an old friend of mine, so like,
yeah,
that's we stick together like,
yeah,
yeah, birds of a same feather or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
the people I'm still in contact with, and like sometimes through Instagram and sometimes,
yeah,
through a little phone call. Hey, how are you?
It's
strange
now, too. That's Bob, yeah.
Yeah, but now it's strange too because like the COVID also destroyed a big part of that.
Mm.
A lot of us who used to be very tied together and just believed in one thing in ink,
yeah,
part of it became like half-ass boogaloo or whatever the hell, and they don't want to... They believe in complot theories, and so we lost also some people in this strange discussion and in the Donald Trump and Biden thing. You know, like I don't like it. To me, these times are not really what I like. I liked the old days where we could travel.
It's crazy. And meet each other. It's crazy that when you're close to people for like 30 plus years,
yeah,
and then there's a political decision coming up, and you split up because of this. Yeah,
polarization. They
crazy.
Call it. Yeah.
Uh huh. Or because of the internet, right?
I'm in contact with people who I know who are like that. I tend to like play a little bit with them and leave it for what it is. I'm not gonna lose people over this thing. But mostly the people who are like that are way more fanatically than we
course,
are.
Of course.
You should really. I should do nothing. And like, yeah. It's the same as the religious thing. People who become like right now in this semi-religious thing.
Yeah.
You know, like basically get five or six religions, put them in the blender,
yeah,
and make something out of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is my good evening, and then like they give you all these whys.
Mm.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, doesn't work like that.
A
question in general. Tattooing, would you describe it? And because your new book is released in the famous Taschen Publishing format, which is well known for fine art and fine art books and stuff like that. So what's your definition of tattooing? Is it craftsmanship? Is it art? Is it art for
normal
people?
It's a very interesting question because like this is what's happening all the time.
Mm.
We've seen the shows at the Kai Brali who want to make art out of his... I don't think we want to be art as art is called art.
Mm.
We are a primitive art. The word art is already difficult. Eh? Who's making art? There's a lot of charlatans and idiots in this business, in the art business, who make shit, who think they make art. There's a lot of hopelessly confused females and males who are like making stuff. I'm an artist. Every time somebody comes in the shop... tells me who's an artist and shows me stuff, I go, oh, well.
Mm.
Well, yeah. Some people, I became an artist world famous just by making round dots.
Yeah.
Religion has made big moves in the art world that the style people who are really coming out of the more refined group of religion, and the Baroque Catholic people. So it's very strange. So it's the question: are we art? Becomes difficult in, like, do we want to be called art? there is a the higher arts have museums.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's very hard to get into these museums, and the stuff they show becomes very difficult for people to understand.
To read, yeah.
I like the idea that when it's summer, then all your art is on bicycles and motorcycles running through the city, and having their crop tops, and you see their back tattoos and their arms tattoos. So the city and the world is our gallery.
Yeah.
You know, the city is our museum, the world is our gallery.
Yeah.
And it becomes very much, much. Yeah. We are a very popular art. Yes, we are.
Mm.
So we are pop art. I mean, like in that term, like, I mean, I don't think there is any art form in this world at this moment who got collected so much as tattoo art.
Yeah.
I mean, like some people could collect Ai Weiwei or whatever, but that is a very small group.
Yeah. Or billionaires.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some of the tattoo people did well as well. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they
right.
mostly married a smart wife and had a good relationship.
Yeah, yeah. When did you see the big change that tattooing become that popular like it is right now? Was
well,
it in the beginning of the 90s?
That's halfway the 80s, the beginning of the 90s. This had to do with the music, television, and yeah. and the fact that you could...
Which you were part of as well.
Yeah, also, yeah. Yeah, well...
The Chili Peppers?
I didn't say it was my fault.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, there is a... Yes, mea culpa. I'm part of this thing, of the popularization.
Yeah.
And especially because, like... as a person becoming so popular, I was able to like being able to talk about what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I was a good advocate. I could advocate
yeah.
the tattoo thing. I could tell something. And the
yes.
newspaper liked me, and the TV stations liked me.
Yeah.
And then when I did a couple of tattooed people, I got like really lucky, of course, to do the Red Hot Chili Peppers, because every video they made was half naked.
Of course.
So like you would see the tattoos all the time. I tattooed a couple of people who did not show the tattoos as much in videos, like
yeah, yeah.
who Mink DeVille or like who had jackets on, so it becomes different.
Mm.
And then when they made Blood Sugar Sex and Magic, which
of
had
course.
All, the, which is 30 years next year, it had all these pictures on it. So,
it's
yeah.
exactly 30 years ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
last
yeah,
Friday, yeah. 91, I guess
yeah,
it came
yeah,
out, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
So that's, that yes, that worked for my advance. The other advance was that I was in one of the fun capitals of the world, Amsterdam.
Yeah.
In the Disneyland of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, the
red light
district.
Yeah.
So that it all helped.
Mm.
So I he got at the right place at the right time with the right attitude and the right. So.
Did you live?
I'm not the greatest artist in the world. There's been people who are way more better at tattoo, who worked really much harder.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm one of the more guys who popularized it, who was able to talk about it. And who was inventive in certain way. I helped introducing some primitive type of tattoos. And
yeah. Did you make some enemies in the 90s that other like Dutch tattooers, older guys said, come
oh,
on,
I remember
what
when
is he
I did the first
about,
convention,
blah, blah, blah.
Which is 40 years in 2 years, 40 years ago
yeah.
in the Paradiso. I said to the Dutch tattooers, I will not have any Dutch tattooers in there.
Uh-huh.
And go, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Uh-huh.
So why, no, I'm inviting about 30 people from all over the world.
Yeah.
Why don't you just keep your fucking eyes open, have a really fucking good look,
yeah.
and maybe you can learn something. And then in the next convention, I will bring in some of you Dutch guys because you learned something.
Was it the tattoo convention where like guys like Marcos Pacheco came? And
The first one was... We had Bob Roberts, had Greg Irons,
okay.
had Horiyoshi,
yeah.
had
yeah, yeah.
so like that was really a really cool one. Little Philip Lou with his father and mother.
Okay.
I think the Lou's came with 12 people or something.
Yeah, yeah, of course, like they do today.
Yeah, well, they set up a whole thing.
Yeah,
but like that has been an important convention. That was 1983, I think, or 84.
And did the other Dutch tattooers understood what you were meaning? Like, Well, because you know that was.
It always stayed a little bit like that.
Yeah.
I'm not really popular among the Dutch tattooers.
Okay.
But then again, that has always been the case with tattooers. Mm-hmm. Your neighbor don't like you too much, but yeah. The guy across the other side of the world likes you a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Would you describe, like even especially back in the days, have you been a tough guy? Or did you have to be a tough guy tattooing in the Amsterdam red light district with all the stuff that was going on there?
Oh yeah, red light district was a little bit different than it is now. Mm. I mean, right now you're looking at some kind of a ladies barber store where you have to make an appointment.
Yeah.
And on. And some people even take a take-in conversation and everything. No, that was just, you walk in, you get tattooed, and we would go to the shop. And if you ended up there at 10 in the morning, there would be already like 20 Italians waiting for you to get tattooed.
Yeah.
And at 3 o'clock they were gone, there was another 20. So 60 to 100 tattoos sometimes were very normal in a day.
Crazy. How many tattooers were there?
We used to work in a very small place with like 6 guys.
Oh, crazy. Okay.
And like we would right sit next to each other. Nothing like you see now with everybody laying down on massage tables.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't even have a massage table.
Mm-hmm.
We would put them right on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody worked there. I mean, that was a cool thing. It became for a lot of people the beginning of their career or a part of their career. Freddie Corbin, Mike Wilson,
yeah.
Bob Roberts, Greg Irons. They all worked in the shop. Zeke Owen,
yeah.
Dave Shore. Eric Hogan, the most incredible. Marcus worked there for a couple
Marcus
of
Pacheco,
days.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Everybody.
But they were interested in the lifestyle. At
they
that
were
time,
interested
right?
in the lifestyle. They were interested in Amsterdam. They were interested in the prostitutes, in the drugs, and yeah.
And so
we had it.
Yeah, yeah. But you had to take care of them a little bit, like.
Well, you know, I had to tell them where you could get the drugs and where the prostitutes were. No, no, that's that was an open book. Yeah. No, but they basically all went to the same bars.
Okay.
And everybody knows the Duivel. Yeah. And the Duivel became like the place where the hip-hop started and with Juan Puente and all these guys were hanging out in the Duivel.
Yeah.
Joe Vegas.
Uh-huh.
Really, yeah, early days of, and that slowly spread into the country.
Yeah,
and some of them started to work in Eindhoven with Greg Ori.
Yeah,
and some of them went to Rotterdam, but still today, we play better football and we make better tattoos in Amsterdam than in Eindhoven.
Of course you do. Of course. Of course. Of course you do. I heard you're a big fan of this new kind of tattoo machines called Cheyenne and so on. Is that right?
No, like Cheyenne and me got started off very, very wrong.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. These people made the introduction was the first box, and they used Anthony Kiedis' arm tattoo as a print on that box.
Really?
Yeah, so they ripped off...
It's a promotional...
Yeah, they ripped off that tattoo. They had
crazy.
It on the box.
The tattoo
and
you did?
Yeah, and oh, they had it upside down and said Cheyenne. And when I talked about it, they were, whoa, we're going to get rid of it anyway. And I said, listen, this is, you cannot do this. And it was in the days of the museum. And I thought, like, if you pay me something, I can use the money for the museum.
Yeah.
And then they wanted to give me the prototype of the Cheyenne machine.
Okay.
And I told them that they could shove it up their fucking ass because I wouldn't use something like that anyway.
Yeah.
I'm still very much against this dildo type of machine. And I'm very much against this group of people who try to like get a grip on the tattoo world and want us to use their colors and use their machines.
Yeah.
And you see this already happening because like all of a sudden everybody wants to buy these little plastic cups with the needles in there.
Yeah.
And they...
This cartridge.
They make you an addiction of their own products.
Mm.
So fuck them. I mean like they would buy the biggest place... And then they have all these idiotic tattoos of babies in 40 colors that will not last at all. They look like a piece of sausage, like in 4 or 5 years, half of that stuff is fallen out.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm not a Cheyenne fan.
Mm. Did you hear about this discussion in Germany that they want to forbid like colors like green and blue because of
this is
whatever reasons?
Well, then also these people are sometimes involved and they have a lobby, yeah?
Yeah.
They have a lot of money, so they have a lobby in what they got colors, other colors they want.
Is a thing happening in Holland as well?
Yes. Okay. This discussion comes from Denmark and from Holland and in Germany.
Yeah.
And basically what happens is certain colors can have an effect on the body if they would travel inside the body.
Yeah. But if now, they stay?
Like the body stops and blocks it.
Yeah.
Now, the laser is popular, but once they got lasered, it starts to travel through the body. So they're actually worried about what happens after they laser it.
Ah, okay.
And lasering is not my business and is should not be any tattooer's his
business. So the dead color is like traveling around.
Yeah,
the
and
body,
then it goes to your lymphs and stuff that.
Okay.
Into your blood. But if you do not laser it, it will stay exactly where it is.
Yeah, okay.
So it is a little bit. But they have some, I think Henning was just.
Henning Jorgensen, yeah?
Was just there with. That's old age. Hoe heet die andere ook weer? I lose names sometimes. But they went to a meeting in Amsterdam and they want you to pay $600 to get into this meeting. It's a discussion on these colors.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to follow them on the internet, you have to pay $200 to follow. It's just a bunch of doctors. And basically, these are like people with a career. They want to like get into a career. They want to have a publication in The Lancet or in some other important magazine. And they're being sponsored by certain ink people.
Yeah.
And now you have the people here in Germany.
Edding.
Edding.
Yes.
Well, let them stay out of fucking tattoo business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, come on.
Yeah.
Talents tried it years ago, but Talents got smart because, like, we should not do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're always afraid to get sued.
Yeah.
But now they want to, they see a chance to bring in their own little cartridges of color and they will end up making them that big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a centimeter by a centimeter. So you have to buy colors separated for every customer.
Yeah.
And you will end up pay. Colors used to cost nothing.
Yeah.
For 100 guilders or D-marks, you would buy kilos of pigment and make your own pigment.
Yeah. I think if you talk to Dutch people and you say the word tattoo, everybody thinks of you as Henk Schiffmacher because you stand for tattooing in Holland or in the Netherlands. So when you say these things in public, you know, the things you just told me, what's the reaction? Do they listen to you?
No.
You've got credibility.
We had a problem with these guys and I had a visit of one of these people who are involved in this thing.
Yeah.
And this guy told me straight in my face. I said, well, you can't do anything at all. So what do you mean? He says, you cannot organize yourself. Your people, the tattoo people cannot organize themselves. And it's right. We don't have a union. We should have a guild.
Yeah.
You know, like, and we should learn people, train people. But like, we don't. Because it's an open profession. Any fool who thinks, like, you know, comes back from 2 years in the military, what am I going to do? I have one leg. Or, you know, let's start tattooing in the back of my... So, like, this is what's happening. And that's not so big of a problem because there was always scratching as well and there was always tattooing in jail. But it becomes dangerous if somebody sits there and the health department gives them a diploma.
Yeah.
You know, oh, the guy has a sterilizer, here's your paper.
Mm.
And people think, oh, well,
oh,
this guy's a certified tattooer.
Yeah. Okay.
And like the next day, the guy digs a hole into this person because he doesn't know how to handle a magnum or... And like the whole, it takes months to heal, and there's blowouts everywhere, and so like that's when you need lasers,
Where the color starts to travel to the body.
So well, I don't know.
Where
like
does the problem start?
A lot of tattooers are very worried.
Yeah,
People who have a very nice business for years realize that it's not as easy anymore. And at this moment, when tourism came down in Amsterdam, and there is all these shops. There is people who are in the center of the city paying 6,000-7,000 euros a month
of course
in rent. They're the first ones to go.
Mm. Yeah.
And then they go into an illegal circuit.
Yeah. Do you still get tattooed? Who did your last tattoo and when?
My daughter.
Can I see it?
She did this little letter.
I just saw it.
The dog died. The dog died. So you have to commemorate something. Sometimes it's a person.
My condolences,
sometimes
by
it's
the way,
a dog.
Yeah.
And this was a very special dog. So me and my wife got the name of the dog.
Yeah.
Sue.
You got it. Got it on your
head. And you see, she does a very nice little lettering. Because it's right above Mr. Cartoon.
Yeah. I got the name of my dog as well here.
Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny. Yeah. I got it at the Aachen Convention 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you still travel the world?
Well, you can't travel anywhere.
Yeah, but in general, like before
I would
Corona.
Love to travel.
Yeah.
I would love to travel.
Yeah.
I have one thing on my, what they call, bucket list.
Yeah.
I still want to go to Easter Island and the Marquesas.
Yeah.
And I haven't been there, so that's on my list. It becomes harder and harder because you are an old fart.
Mm.
You know, like, you're not, it's not as easy anymore. You get overweighted. I have to watch I get what everybody else gets. I get the bill.
Yeah.
Sent from the doctor, like for how you lived your life.
Mm.
So I have to be more careful.
Even if you live healthy as a tattooer, you're sitting like a cripple for 40 years.
Yeah, but you cannot live healthy as a tattooer. If you live healthy like a tattooer, you're a priest. And we haven't been priests, we've been pirates. And we got us pirate in this business. So we lived a pirate life.
Yeah.
And the pirate life, then you have one leg
and
somebody stepped you in your side or whatever. Like you lost an arm or whatever.
Yeah.
That makes you a pirate.
Do you know younger tattooers nowadays who live the pirate way of tattooing?
It is difficult. It's different now. I see a lot of young people I really, really appreciate who make really fantastic art.
Yeah.
And mostly these are American kids.
Yeah, okay.
And these are people who come out of a very poor background, live in the ghettos and come out of the ghettos.
They want something.
And their talent is bringing them somewhere.
It's an
these
opportunity
are like Chicano
for them.
Kids.
Yeah.
The Mexicans did very well. Years ago, we would go to Mexico and there was nobody tattooing there. And now there is a lot of fantastic tattooers out there.
Yeah.
Also in the project, it was a whole, for some people, talent is your savior.
Yeah.
If you use it right.
Plus they got their own style of tattooing, this whole cholo imagery.
Yeah,
and
yeah, good
really
lettering, they're very graphic. And they have a whole tradition in Manila and Posado, and like in these early, very graphic type of artists, boot carvers, and I see this Waiwei thing here, which I really like as well, because it reminds me of that stuff.
Yeah.
That's a wood carving.
Yeah. Like in the 70s and 80s, have you been in contact with German tattooers?
I go to Kuhnen's show a couple of times in Aachen.
Okay.
Andreas
Kuhnen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the rest of the German artists, Luke Atkinson, I consider a German as well.
Yeah.
Who did a lot for German tattooing. Luke,
yes.
You know, Luke is a very important person in Stuttgart.
Yeah.
He speaks German as well.
I think he's German right now.
He could be German.
Yeah.
He has a German daughter and Luke is a very good, cool person.
Yeah.
I remember Luke was 13 years old and a punk. And he came into my tattoo shop and he wanted a tattoo and I kicked him out of the shop and he said, go travel the world and come back. And that's what he did.
Ah, okay. How many years later came he back?
Years later, when he'd been years in Japan. I don't think there is anybody in Europe who has been so extensively in Japan who knows so many Japanese artists.
Maybe Alex Reinke, who did the apprenticeship with Horiyoshi?
Yeah, but he's out of the business.
Yeah.
Horiyoshi, he made a couple of very stupid mistakes in that matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, he wanted something else out there.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember like coming to Horiyoshi and you would run into people like that who would tell you after years of friendship, Sensei is not ready to receive you yet, but Sensei will be here any minute.
Mm-hmm.
Go fuck yourself, you know, like I know Sensei already like since 19... There's always been these people, like, and Horiyoshi took advantage of some of these guys, and but Horiyoshi cannot do anything wrong on my on my side.
Yeah. When did you meet him for the first time?
Alex, yeah, I say hello to Alex, but like...
No, I mean Horiyoshi. When did you meet Horiyoshi, the third?
We hang out in Rome, at the Asino and the Zebra in 83 for weeks.
It was his first time in Europe, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that was really cool. Hardy set that show up. It was very funny because it was paid by money from the Rome Communistic Party.
Really?
Yeah, but like they had no idea, the Americans had no idea how a communist looked like.
Yeah.
They thought a communist wear black pajamas and shoot you at night. But in Rome, they have the Dolce & Gabbana and they come with a Lamborghini. It's a political thing.
Interpretation.
It's an intellectual political thing, so it's very different.
Yeah.
And we were there with Patello, Suluape. Bill Salmon. Lyle.
Rest in peace.
Was there Pinky Jan? Dennis Cockle.
Yeah.
Dennis Cockle, who made a shitload of fucking money there because he bought a sheep with all small tattoos.
Yeah.
And the rest was trying to make all this big stuff. And he just worked all day. I think he bought an extra case to go home to all put the all the liras in there. Still had these liras who were as big as a doormat.
yeah. Only for the case. Yeah.
I'm going to go and work again. Yeah. On the 22nd of October, we are going to Gabriele in Rome.
Yeah.
And he's making a small show with Marco Pisa, Cipi Rondinella, Louise, Dennis Cockle, and me tattooing for 3 days there.
When you speak these names out, do you speak Italian?
Well, we speak Italian like we had in the shop.
Yeah,
you know, we speak Italian like everyone. You know, so the Italian comes in, he has to an appointamento, he has to leave a deposito.
Okay, okay.
He has to wash his tattoo and do a decimani for 14 days, no masturbani, and that kind of bullshit. So like we would play a little bit with him.
Yeah.
Molly would shave the girls their mustache first with a straight razor.
Yeah.
So like it was we were a bunch of like, it was wild.
Yeah. What gave you more like benefit in your life? The possibility to being a tattooer or all the stuff that came with it? All the friendship,
For me, it had to be all that stuff.
Yeah.
I liked it all. Right now, I do a lot of commercial stuff. I love that I made a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
And now I just made the new 8 o'clock TV show. I just did the whole interior of the show.
Yeah.
I love that. So I like to do a bicycle, a vodka bottle, a beer bottle. Yeah. That whole graphic part I liked.
Yeah.
I stayed true to my school. I use stuff which but knives and steak knives. I love it. I like to do it all.
Do you draw every day or do you have like a working space?
Yes, I'm here is my Sharpie.
Yeah.
And anything is white is in danger.
Yeah. So far the
table stayed clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so but that could change. Like, but it's you're right.
Yeah. I think in the end of 90s, beginning of 2000, you left Amsterdam and went somewhere else to work. Is it true?
No, in the late 90s, I got into trouble with my landlord over the situation I was in.
Yeah. Okay.
And he was not the kind of landlord where you make an argument with, so I disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked a long time in the house until that problem was sort of solved.
Yeah,
that problem is solved now.
Yeah.
So then when my daughter... The guy from the school called me up and says, your daughter is not doing well, blah, blah, blah. The only way she can do well probably is if you would take her in, because then she can leave school earlier, and then if you teach the father. Mm-hmm. So I got her out of school when she was 16 and learned how to tattoo.
Mm-hmm. What still excites you in tattooing? Is it like seeing tattoos? Is it like...
I like jailhouse stuff. I like.
Yeah.
I just saw that Pascal Bagot. You know this guy called Pascal.
I heard of him. Yeah.
And he just showed me some stuff out of a 19th century French jail.
Yeah.
And so I love that early stuff.
Yeah.
I also see people who make this stuff, like there's a guy called Emile Steenhuizen in Holland who tries to make this stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should. You know, like, become so narrow but I like what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My last two questions. I want to talk a little bit about the personality of Henk Schiffmacher. The person Henk Schiffmacher, what are you good at and what are you not good at?
There is a Stoney Sinclair saying, if you can't dazzle him with brilliance, you baffle him with bullshit. I'm good in that part.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like, I'll get my way out of there. But I'm not good in it. I wish I would be a little bit more careful sometimes in terms of drawing. I wish I would take a little bit more, and I wish I had a little bit more time to do what I do.
Yeah.
I have my weaknesses. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of good times having good times, and so like I wish I did a little bit better on that side, and I wish I didn't neglect my body so much through these years, so that it gives me more energy to do what I still want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very, very end, it is what it is, and fuck it. You know, I loved what I did. I left my mark.
Yeah. Thank you, Henk Schiffmacher.
All right. Well, nice one.
Thank you.
Zuerst war die Haut. Der Tattoo-Podcast. Mit Oliver Plöger.